Well, I love talking to first-time guests, and we're going to have one in just a moment. Scott Roberts right here on Coast to Coast AM as we talk about Dead Reckoning and some other paranormal events. Scotty Roberts' background is laced with varied and diverse skills and experiences. His research of the paranormal expanded throughout the 80s and 90s, and Scott is currently continuing his investigations of historical and haunted sites. He's been working on the development of a television show, Dead Reckoning, since March of 2008, and here he is, Scott Roberts. Hey, Scott, welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hi, George. Thanks for having me.
Varied background. You've had some different experiences in your life.
Well, I have. I started out in seminary, Bible college and seminary, and that took me directly into advertising. And there's a neat mix.
Yeah.
And, boy, my curiosity for the paranormal was there since I was a kid. Of course, very differently defined nowadays than it was back in the late 60s and the early 70s when I was growing up.
Yeah, that's true. But it all seems to start when we were younger, because the same thing happened to me.
It does. You know, I sit back and I remember days laying on the top of my mom's garage at night, just looking at the stars. And I was a big Star Trek fan back then, and I was into science fiction, and I was into ghosts, and we had the creature feature nights every Friday and Saturday night on the local television station showing the old movies from the 40s. And that's the stuff that really prompted. That's when your imagination is fertile and you're just rife and you're ripe and ready to go into something as a kid with a kid's mentality. And bringing that kind of mentality up into the present is what I think retains that mystical element, that desire to want to know something, to look into the curious.
Did you find that as you were trying to get more and more information about the paranormal, as you moved on with this, did you hit any roadblocks along the way?
Roadblocks. Yeah, a lot of it had to do with certainly the denomination I was in, the Christian denomination. I was raised fairly agnostic, my family, but when I was 11 years old, started going to a Baptist church. And with other kids, and I was in a very conservative, fundamentalist Baptist background, and I went to Baptist church and high school and college and seminary. I went all through that and was going and was ministry bound. And I would say that the more I got into the paranormal, it was kind of an offshoot of starting to rethink things in the mid 80s to the 90s. And as I started getting more and more into the paranormal, I reached hit a lot of roadblocks. A lot of that was with people that were in my denomination or of my faith. And this is all the devil's work, of course, the way we were taught that.
Sure.
And, I'd gotten into tarot reading, and I'd gotten into a little bit of ghost hunting, more rudimentary than what we do now. But paranormal investigation, I guess there's a big difference between ghost hunting and paranormal investigation. So I like to stick my nose up in the air a little bit and say I'm a paranormal investigator, not a ghost hunter. That's some of the early conflict was faith issues, and we can talk more about that if you want to.
Yeah, I do. And then your TV show. Tell me about Dead Reckoning. How's that coming?
Dead Reckoning is coming along. It started as there's this thing out there in the paranormal field now, if you will, or community, that with the advent, of course, of televised ghost hunting and paranormal investigating, that being the pop culture and the stuff that sways a lot of American thinking, you've got a lot more people in this country doing ghost hunting and investigating. Along with that comes the 3 million different podcasts that are out there from everybody who wants to do one, and everybody who thinks they can do a television show. And there's a more power to them, to whoever wants to do that. What started it for me was the desire to create things. Being an illustrator, a designer, being a creative director in advertising for years, having done television commercials and having done theater and all of that kind of stuff, it was just kind of a natural offshoot. I didn't necessarily want to do a show just to have a paranormal show out there. I had always thought it would be fun to put a television show together that had some efficacy somewhere, could teach something. I'm a big lover of history. And I thought, now here's an angle. I see a lot of these paranormal shows out there that have ghost hunting and investigating.
Mm-hmm. And there are many.
and there's many of them. And I thought, if we can take an angle that encapsulates these two loves that I have, paranormal investigation and history. So I said, nothing's being done in the Midwest, which is where I'm from. I live in Wisconsin, about 40 miles from the Twin Cities, Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. I grew up here, and I hadn't seen a whole lot done in this area. And I thought, the rich history out here, as opposed to what's out east or in Europe and so on, you've got Native American culture out here. You've got the expansionism of the 19th century that moved into Native American lands. And there's so much rich history around here surrounding that, in Minnesota, Wisconsin, the Dakotas. So why don't we create a show that deals with the history of these areas and make a historical show that would be good on the History Channel, the Discovery Channel, some places like that, and infuse it with paranormal investigation and say, if there are ghosts out there or if there are spirits out there, what if we could get them to talk to us the way we do when we're in private and doing investigations? Mm-hmm. What if we could record that on these historical sites? And so, in a sense, you would have the voices of the people who lived then speaking now and illuminating history. And that's really what the basis of the show is all about, the concept.
What does that tell you about the ability of what it may be? If we're able to record them, we've all heard EVP sounds.
Yeah.
Albeit most of them, you know, you hear things like, you know, you don't really hear it. But if we're able to record them, what does that tell you? That they're dimensional, that they're just on another plane of existence, and that through, you know, electromagnetic waves, we're able to hear them that way?
Yeah. Now, here's an interesting thing. I am not the go-to person on anything we're going to talk about. I'm just another guy that does it. So I don't understand all the ins and outs of all the technology. I just know that this thing in my hand sometimes works, and I can give you an mm-hmm. idea of why it works. Yeah, it's obvious to me that there is something from another plane that's finding ways to communicate with us. In the past, when we didn't have this electronic equipment and some of the devices that we have nowadays, and even new stuff being developed all the time, ghosts would manifest themselves in many ways. You know, they would knock on your wall. They would whisper in your ear sometimes. You would see something materialize. You'd hear noises or things move. Now, it's almost like you can go out there almost anywhere, and if you use a device that can communicate with them, you're going to pick something up. And sure, many times you get the, and you go, wow, that said, I'm your lost aunt, you know, and there'd be a million different interpretations of what you get.
Yeah.
But sometimes you get stuff that's so incredibly off the wall, so incredibly clear, ghost box stuff that I have done. There's people poo-poo the ghost box, the ovalis, the K2 meters, and all of that. You know, everybody's got an opinion. But what I go back to is the credibility of the people who use the devices. Are they known to be good people, known to be credible people? Therefore, their evidence is weighed against their personal credibility? And you don't know me from Adam, but people that I work with who know me and the people that I work with that I know are credible people. And so when we get something on tape, we get something through a ghost box, an interactive communication, that to me is real stuff. And sometimes you can decipher it. Sometimes you got to listen to it over and over again, and you hope you're not making up something. When I come to a point where I think I have to stretch something to make it fit, I don't want to use it as evidence. I don't want to buy it. It might be something real, but if I can't reproduce that, play that so somebody can hear it and understand it, it doesn't really do any good. So I've had ghost box. You've heard of the ghost box or the Frank's box?
Absolutely, Frank's box.
I had an experience with my then 16-year-old daughter, now 17, it was about a year ago, where somebody came through that box and said it was my aunt who had passed away in 1995 at a very early age, at about 44 years old. And I kept retesting this entity that was speaking with me. I kept asking questions over and over again for consistency and kept getting consistent answers. The first thing it said was, "This is Andy." And the way the ghost box works, I know you've been through all this before, but the way it works for me it wasn't so much the reassembling of phrases and sentences by radio gibberish. That drives me absolutely insane. What I would get is a voice that floats over the frequency. So you'd hear the gibberish in the background of the radio frequencies being scanned and hear a voice over the top. And it was almost sounded like a man speaking in falsetto, very soft, this female voice. And it said, "This is Andy." And my daughter said, "Dad, did you hear that?" And I said, "Yeah." And I said, "Who is this?" And it said, Andy, like that. And it started asking us questions. It asked me this question in particular about two-thirds of the way through. "Where is Janie?" It said, "Now, Janie is my mom, her sister." And out of the blue asks me where my mother is by name. And so the only fly in the ointment with this, you never know what you're really talking to. Is this the ghost of my dead aunt living somewhere else on another plane, finding a way to communicate with me? Is this something else? Is this some spirit entity that needs that attention or needs to draw me to it so I will talk to it? So it will mock things or mimic things. That's where you start getting to angelics, demonics, other kinds of spirits. I know there's all kinds of opinions on that.
And we're getting into those, Scott. Have you come to any conclusions about what you think this is on the other side?
My conclusion is it's a range of things. Here's what I will say, even though there's controversy. I will say there are definitely ghosts. There are ghosts of people who have passed on. Do I understand exactly where they are, why they're talking to me, why they're trapped here? I think there's part of the answer there. Some of them are trapped here. Some of them are speaking from another plane. Some of them want to communicate with you. Then there are, in my opinion, demonics. There are those kinds of evil spirits that are there to distract you. There are some beliefs out there that believe if you have a ghost, ghosts don't talk to people, they say. Ghosts are either trapped there, they need prayer, they need whatever. The only thing that will want to engage you in conversation would be a demonic, because it wants to draw your attention away from God or draw your attention away from something. I don't know that I believe that per se, word for word, but I believe there's a mixture of that. So you've got ghosts, you've got demonics, you've got angelics. I believe you might even have individuals from different dimensional planes. You talk about shadow people. You talk about disembodied voices that comes. Sometimes I think one of the theories about the origins of the ghost box is that there are only a certain number of people that can own them, and only a certain number of people are asked for by name to be given one. I've never talked to really any of those people, so I don't know that, you know, firsthand experience, and I've never had a box call out my name and say, "I'm for Scotty Roberts." It's never happened to me. But I've had some weird ghost box stories. I've got a good friend of mine, April Slaughter, with Paranormal Source. She called me up one night and said, "Scotty, I got a weird, weird thing." She said, we were doing a box session, and the voice came out and said, "Call Scotty at 9:10. It was something like, I don't know how clear it was, but this is the message. And they had a little brief message it wanted to relay to me about some personal matters. And I said, "Okay, that's very interesting. Thanks." And then she called me back about 20 minutes later and said, "Scotty, it did it again." And she said, "It's telling me to have you call Chris Moon and have Chris Moon do a box reading for you." And April and Chris had been friends in the past and don't do much business together now. So she said, "That right there should tell you something." She said, "Just tell Chris it was this box." And so I called Chris, and Chris kind of chuckled a little bit. And he said, "Really?" And he said, "April wanted you to call me." And I said, "No, her box wanted you to call me." And, of course, we laughed about that. And so we got interesting stuff out of Chris's ghost box that night. And it led into, when we have time to talk about some demonics a little later, that night out of those sessions led into some very, if you would, creepy experiences. I don't get too scared about anything, but I get startled and I get creeped out sometimes. And some creepy dreams, and my daughter's had very similar dreams the same night, we all corroborated facts later, and we think that there was some demonic issues in there as well. And that's a big, long story all by itself.
Do you think we're being bombarded by these entities for some reason, some purpose? I mean, is there an agenda?
Well, that's where you can get into theology,
mm-hmm.
or you can get into, you know, other types of viewpoints. I think it's all theology to one sense or another. One is Christian theology, the other is a different kind of theology. I call it paranormal theology, if you will. I think that there is, I have heard theories on the ghost box stuff, the interdimensional stuff, that there is something that's going on there. I don't know enough about that to address it, so I don't want to talk about it too much other than to say, if you want to look into that, there are people who use the ghost box for interdimensional communication is what they believe in, and there's some agenda there, and I don't understand all that. From the theological standpoint, if there are angelics and demonics out there, and if there are demonics that are imitating the ghosts or the spirits of people that we love who have passed on, is there an agenda to that? I believe there can be. If you go strictly biblical theology, which is my background, I've drifted a bit off from that, but the basic tenets of my faith I haven't thrown out. If these are demonics and they're imitating ghosts out there, while ghosts do exist at the same time, but you're getting some imitation out there, you don't know who you're really talking to. Is there an agenda? Their agenda might be to just simply draw your attention away from God. What's the line from, what was it, The Usual Suspects or something that said the devil's greatest trick was convincing people he didn't exist?
Yeah, yeah, so true.
And I think what happens out there is you get people that are so seduced by what they hear and communicate with, and I'm guilty of this myself, you get drawn in by the curiosity of it. Tell me for a minute, George, that if you didn't have a little box on your desk start talking to you out of nowhere with no transmitter, you had no microphone, and it was answering your questions, that you wouldn't be drawn by curiosity into what that thing was doing.
Absolutely. I'd want to take this box apart, and I'd realize, you know, how is this thing working? What's happening? And where's it coming from?
Exactly. And I am guilty as charged. I am totally drawn in by the curiosity of this. But I try to pull myself back and say, as a paranormal investigator, we're kind of like those old explorers, you know, 400 or 500 years ago, who said, the world is round, you know, and there's another land over there, and nobody believed them, and some were branded as heretics for believing such, but they went out exploring for it. They wanted to know. It wasn't just, oh, you just want to get a ship together and take a bunch of guys and go partying out on the ocean. It wasn't that. They weren't thrill seekers, although there was an element of that. They were explorers, and they wanted to know. They wanted to expand their knowledge base. And that's maybe in their own way, while looking for gold and totally selfish reasons, they also expanded the human race by doing that. And I think that's what we're doing here.
Why does there seem to be an incredible interest in the paranormal nowadays, much more than I thought years ago?
I think it's twofold. First of all, pop culture. I think people are drawn by pop culture into things. You look at, I was talking to Kieran O'Keefe from Most Haunted at a little convention last year. And he said in England alone, they had gone from 2 paranormal groups to something like 350 paranormal groups in the span of a couple of years. And you know that that's going on in America as well. This exponential increase in people wanting to do ghost hunting. And with the advent of shows like The Ghost Hunters and other shows like that, who are, by the way, I know Jason and Grant, they're very good people. I find them very credible, good people on an individual friendship.
Yes, and they love what they're doing.
But people see that show, and I think there is good results out of that. You've got great people out there forming groups and exploring this stuff. It's a spiritual exploration. But then you've got a lot of groups, I think, that are into it for the thrill of it and the fun seeking of it, which all of us who do it for what we believe is a more hoity-toity reason in our own books, there are still people out there that are doing it for the wrong reasons. There are people that can get themselves into trouble because they're messing around with the wrong stuff and they're using the wrong kind of stuff.
Scott, we'll be back with you in just a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. If you're interested in StreamLink, just go to coasttocoastam.com. For just pennies a day, you get podcasting and downloads and the ability to listen to programs via computer and just save your shows. Build your own library of coast-to-coast programs. And welcome back to Coast, we're with Scott Roberts. I guess we could call you a paranormal researcher, right?
You could.
Well, so be it. Demon, Scott, what do you think?
That's a big topic, and there are certainly people who can speak to this on a much more, if you will, hands-on basis than I can. I have probably encountered them. Almost every paranormal investigator to one point or another has probably encountered them many times, probably without knowing it. There is somebody that I can mention by name. There's a couple of people, John Zaffis and Adam Bly, who are both demonologists, which I am not. I don't make a claim to be a demonologist, and I don't know if I ever really want to be one.
Why not?
I believe, and I draw some of this from many conversations with Adam Bly, is that why would you want to be someone who is looking for these evil entities when their only intent is to wreak havoc, to destroy, to deceive, and to basically pull your attention from God, if you will? And of course, every religion out there, to one extent or another, has some sort of spirit being, angelic being, demonic being. Demons, the things that I have seen are mostly secondhand. I'm never there. I don't do exorcisms. I don't go looking for demons. And if I find what I think is a demon, I'll very quickly back off of that, because that is not anything I really want to get myself involved with. I have had, I believe, from not now here, I'm going to step out on a branch and tell this a little bit. I believe that I have had demonic attachment. I've never been possessed or obsessed or anything like that, but attachment. And there's, if you look to, I'm going to quote a website. It's a very open website for people that Adam Bly puts up, religiousdemonology.com. That's where he writes about all of this stuff. He's very Roman Catholic. He writes it from that perspective.
Right,
I'm not
right.
Roman Catholic. And so I don't agree with everything of Adam's, but I think he lays out a pretty good dissertation online there for what he believes. But what I believe is that I had some demonic attachment to me. It was affecting my family.
How did it happen? Do you know?
I still don't know how it happened. And I even asked Adam about this, and Adam actually prayed with me about this. And he said there is an attachment there, and it's been removed. And of course, it goes to, once again, I have to put this disclaimer, and anything like that that gets said, you have to take it back to the credibility of the individual. And so I find him wholly credible, and I believe what he had to say. What I noticed was going on in my family, and this was very different from anything that had ever gone on. This was my first notice of it, was I have teenage daughters who are now 17. That right there, you know, some might label that demonic activity right there.
I've been there.
But
not demonic, but it's a lot of work.
Right. And my daughters and I have always been close. And I've just been remarried in the last couple of years. And by the way, I have a child on the way. I have a son coming in about 9 weeks. But we were all standing around, and we noticed over a period of months that things were getting more and more tense in our home. Arguments went out of the argument stage and went into the bombastic, the belittling, the hurtful stage. And we found there was one night where we were all yelling. And, you know, and nobody who is out there at all in the public eye wants to ever admit that, but that's, it happens to everybody. But this was a building tensity in our house. And in this one particular night, we were all yelling at each other. People were crying. We're standing here at the bar, which divides the kitchen and the main house, and we were yelling at each other. And in the middle of all that, I said, stop, there's something is going on here. And I got this very deep feeling that something much deeper was going on. And now let me say this too. I don't need to see this stuff so much that I make it up, or that I need to create something, or that I go off on something and try to over-spiritualize. I hate doing that. I hate when it gets done, and I hate doing it myself. But I had a distinct feeling that there was attack going on in this house, because we had never had anything like that before. And that is one of the signs of, one of the first initial signs when there is demon oppression in a house, or demons allowed into the lives of people in one and even an arm's reach length, that kind of activity starts intensifying around the house. Then there were a series of dreams and so on. But you know, getting back to this incident, I stopped my family and I said, "We've got to stop this. There's something's going on here. Let's stop. Let's calm it down. Let's get out of the house. Let's do some." And as soon as we started saying there might be a spiritual influence here, it started calming itself. And then I went through a series of prayers. I prayed with Adam Bly a bit, and he said there was definitely something there. There were even objects in the house that were said to have been attached by demonic forces, rings in the house, a cross in the house, of all things, and to get those things out of the house. And if I can go into this little bit of a story, if this is a good time for it.
Sure.
I had mentioned when I talked to Chris Moon and April Slaughter about the ghost box, and I had that communication. At the end of that, Chris said to me, "Scotty, you're going to have, I'm being told you're going to have some kind of visitation tonight. There's going to be something delivered to you of a spiritual nature. Don't know what it is. I'm getting the impression it's going to involve children." Now, right away, when you get told those things, you can psychologically make anything happen in your sleep or in your stupor moments. So I very much clear myself after that, and I say, "Okay, if there's anything here in my house," I said, "I'm here. You can talk to me. I'm going to go to sleep." It's about midnight that night, and we'd had a fire in the house, and the whole family was gone. I was in the house sorting things out. So I went to bed, and I was woken up. I went to bed at midnight, and I was woken up every hour on the hour that night at 1 o'clock, 2, 3, 4, 5, skipped 6 o'clock and went to 7. Every hour on the hour, something jolted me awake, and I'd get up and walk around the house, and there was nothing. At one of these moments, I saw in that mistiness as you're waking up, two small children at the foot of my bed. And now, I'm not given to visions. I'm not given to over-spiritualizing. I'm not given to weird stuff like that. If it happens, it happens. I don't make it happen. But I saw these two children for a brief flicker of a second. And the way they were dressed was very important. They had scraggly hair, and they looked like, if you think of sanatorium children from the last century, they were dressed like that.
Sure.
It was almost like gunny sacks or very harsh fabric with rope belts, and looking very rough and dirty and standing at the foot of my bed. And I saw them, and then I woke up and they weren't there, so I wasn't really startled. And I got up and I walked around. I said, "Is there a message?" Someone said, nothing. Now, that afternoon, my daughter came home, a 17-year-old daughter, Bryn, and she said, "Dad," she said, "I had this really weird dream last night," and she was staying at her mother's. And we never got a chance to talk about it. And it wasn't until after the went to the Big Mount Washington event with Ghost Hunters in April. And I got home, and I was talking about my experiences there, and my daughter, Bryn, again said, "Dad, I never told you about this dream I had the night that this stuff happened to you." And she said, "I had a dream that night of my little son going down in the basement of our house, and he was with a young girl who had blonde hair, kind of scraggly. She was dressed in kind of this gunny sack with a rope belt in her dream. And this little girl was trying to corner my son in the far basement room. We've got a dank, dark, icky basement in this old 100-year-old farmhouse. And this little girl in my daughter's dream turned into a demon and tried to prevent her from getting my son out, and my daughter took her. And then, of course, the little girl said, 'I just wanted to play with your brother.' And then she woke up. Then my other daughter, as my daughter's telling me this, said, 'Dad, I had a dream that same night. And there was a very, what looked like a good-looking man, and his older man in his mid-30s. That should make us all feel good.
yeah, standing in, if that's old, what are we, right?
Yeah, really, ancient. A man standing in my son's doorway to his bedroom. He had a cane, and when he looked up in my daughter's dream, it was like he was preventing anybody from coming into my son's room. He looked up, and his eye sockets were hollowed out. And that terrified her in her dream, and she woke up. I have come to believe in life by many different things that have happened. There's no such thing as coincidence.
That's what I've been saying, Scott, for years.
Oh, man. And when all three of these things happened on the same night, and we were in different houses, and we were apart from each other, And the activity I've had here in this old farmhouse where I live, the stuff with the voices we've gotten here, the things we've had happen here, combine that with the prayers I did with Adam Bly, the attachment that he said that I had, all of these things started wrapping in together as no coincidence, that something's going on, that there's some kind of demonic influence of some kind. Now, you can get a skeptic, and there's nothing wrong with skeptical thinking, but the dyed-in-the-wool skeptics, I like to call their evangelists in the Church of Skeptic. They live by the skeptic's credo or manifesto. I think that they've supplanted faith with skepticism. They're the ones that will say, well, you made that all up in your heads. You had psychological stuff going on and so on. Well, my daughters were not privy to the conversations I'd had, the ghost box stuff I had had that night. And we all had very similar experiences. Mine was an experience. Theirs were dreams. And then we find further that there was some kind of demonic. And by the way, I got to say that my belief that there was demonic attachment to me, nobody can prove that. You can't prove it with science. You can't repeat it in a laboratory. You can't take a picture of it. All you've got is experience and things that happen to us. And I believe that. That's my opinion, but it's based in a belief that these things are real because I've seen it.
Oh, there's no question about it.
In other ways. I've seen it through the ghost box. Was that really my aunt talking to me, asking me questions? I still to this day don't know if that was really her. I want to believe it was her. One thing is for certain, there was a voice communicating with me. I don't hallucinate too much.
Last night we were training a new call screener as a backup person, and she brought a picture with her, Scott, and she had a friend who committed suicide, and they were all very close. And apparently there was a picture taken of her family dog with a mirror on the wall behind the couch. Okay, so you've got the mirror on the wall, the couch, and the dog on the couch, and there's a picture taken.
Okay.
In the mirror, you see a reflection of a face. And it's not the person who took the picture because the picture was done from an angle, and you can see the face over in the other corner. And it was as bizarre as she has ever seen. Well, she brings the picture in. And after the show, I'm looking at it with a microscope practically.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, it is strange. Anyways, we're going to get the picture over to Lex, and we'll put it up on the website.
But the face of her friend?
She's not sure. It's a small little head. You could just see that there's a figure there. And she knows that there's nothing on the other side of the wall that would have reflected into the mirror.
Now, not at all to detract from her picture. It could very well be a very real entity manifesting itself in a picture. But many times what we do, I've done this before. You'll see something in a picture, and you think it's something else, and then you go back to that spot, and it's nothing. There's an old hotel, Frontier Hotel, here in the Minneapolis. Well, it's about an hour from Minneapolis toward the west. It's been there for 100 years. Sinclair Lewis used to work there, things like that. And very haunted little hotel. We've investigated there many times. The owner of the hotel had a photograph that I think it was a guest had taken from one of the stairwells looking down at their friend. And there was a mirror on the back of the stairwell. In the mirror, you see what looks like a little child with its hand up to its eyebrows looking into the window from the bright outside. And she thought that was a ghost. And I went to that very same spot where the picture was taken. I looked in the mirror, and sure enough, there was that child again, sitting right there in that window staring back. And so I turned to the stairwell window and looked out. And by the angles, all it was the aluminum tubing, chimney tubing and stuff like that had configured itself in such a way at that angle that in that reflection, it looked precisely. I stood there on the steps thinking, that looks like a little child. But that's the kind of matrixing, if you will, that can be done. Sometimes we want to see that stuff, or we think we see it, and we think that's what it is. And so when you get evidences, as a researcher, you will look for the source of that. I don't necessarily agree with the debunking process, but I believe in a process of research. Maybe it's just semantics. You take any evidence you get while you're investigating, you put it through rigorous testing, and even if you believe it's real and you can't, if you can prove that it's something else, or if you can debunk it somehow, generally, I won't show that kind of evidence. It's just personal evidence, and it's not something I'm going to put out there. But many times, that kind of stuff, like pictures like that, you got to be really sure. But then sometimes you get a face, and it's nothing else but a face.
Well, we'll find out. She's going to check into it. We're going to try to get this expanded a little bit more and see what we can find. But there's just too many strange things out there, Scott.
There is no such thing as the supernatural. There is the natural, and there is the natural. This is all part of the universe. And what we have done, I believe, in our society is we have so relegated spirituality, God, if you will, things of a spiritual nature to the realm of we no longer need that. We now have science. We can explain things away, and with a broad swash of our hands, we wash away everything that was once believed and held as superstition because we know better now. We know how thermonuclear dynamics work. We know how medicine works. And so we no longer need gods, angels, demons, devils, and so on. And because we have so elevated ourselves, we have, in a sense, become very arrogant because we've belittled what I believe really exists in the natural world. It's just a different part of nature.
A different part, indeed. What's your favorite website here? DeadReckoningTV.com?
DeadReckoningTV.com. That's our little show that we're working on. And I will say this, I can't mention the name of the network, but we have worked with a larger network. Cable network that has come in, and they actually came and filmed us with their production company about 6 weeks ago.
Good.
And we are working, doing some more shooting for Dead Reckoning in about 2 weeks.
What's your target date?
We are hoping by the end of the summer to have a contract in hand, but you know how things work.
Oh, yeah, it's very slow.
We could be doing this for years. It may go nowhere. But we're working very hard to make something worthwhile.
Well, you know television.
Yeah.
And that's the important thing. And you know what sells.
Absolutely.
Next hour, I want to talk with you about elves and spirits and those kinds of areas as well. Are you glad that this world is becoming more aware of this field?
Oh, yeah. It's like I said at a conference when I was speaking on the Nephilim and on fairies and on elves at Mount Washington, and I said, you know, this stuff I'm going to tell you about sounds like the whack fringe of what we do, but remember, the rest of the world thinks that people who look for ghosts are the whack fringe of the world, so I'm kind of the whack fringe with some of these ideas, is what I told them. If you can believe that there, first of all, if you can believe there's a God, can you believe there's a ghost? If you can, and I think that's part of the reason people discount demons, because in order to believe that it's a demon would mean they would have to accept that there is something of a spiritual nature out there of an evil force, and that might have to force them to believe that maybe God is there. And as far as fairies go, elves go, I believe they all exist, and I believe that there are good source points to find out where they're from and how they interact.
Well, absolutely. How about a website, Scott? With email, because people always want to email.
Okay. Can I give out my Tarot website?
Sure.
You can just go to Tarot by Scotty, T-A-R-O-T by Scotty.com. And my phone number is all over that site. You can reach me at Scotty at TarotbySkotty.com.
All right. Well, you shall be back in a moment with Scott Roberts. If you need to email me, that's George at Coast2TO, coasttocoastam.com. And we'll be back in a moment as we continue chatting with him about elves and we might as well talk with them about tarot cards as well. I'll be back.